Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
I am continuing to read the Odessa American for Sunday, January 22, 2023. Thompson Now Not Sure About City Attorney Vote by Kim Smith. The brouhaha over the firing of Odessa City Attorney Natasha Brooks continues, but now Odessa City Council member Steve Thompson is second-guessing his vote against her termination because she's now alleged to have asked city staff to backdate a conflict of interest disclosure form he signed. Brooks was terminated by a 5-2 vote by the Odessa City Council without explanation on December the 13th. Now allegations are surfacing about Brooks that are related to a long-standing dispute between Thompson, City Council members Denise Swanner and Mark Mata, and Odessa Development Corporation Board Chairman Chris Crow. 2 weeks after Brooks was fired, City Secretary Norma Aguilar Grimaldo and Notary Public Legal Assistant Nara Enriquez both signed affidavits stating that on December 9th or December 10th, 2020, Brooks instructed them to either file, stamp, or notarize a conflict of interest disclosure statement signed by Thompson with a December 8th, 2020 date. It's also been revealed Robert Carroll, a now-deceased assistant city attorney, deleted the backdated document from the city's website on December the 14th, 2020. According to Texas law, it is a misdemeanor crime for a notary public to backdate documents, but there is a 2-year statute of limitations. Attempts to reach Brooks were unsuccessful Saturday. Thompson said he was shown Aguilar Grimaldo and Enriquez affidavits by interim city attorney Dan Jones on Wednesday and was shocked. Thompson said on the morning of December 8, 2020, he told then-city manager Michael Marrero he would be abstaining from a vote that night involving his former company, STA Benefits, and the next day he signed a form acknowledging his conflict of interest at Brooks' request. While he questioned Brooks about the form being dated December 8th, Thompson said he was told that because he had the conversation with Marrero, it was okay. She's a city attorney. She's my attorney. Okay, so I'm leaning on her advice. Thompson said, I trusted people. I trusted people who are supposed to know. It was the first time I'd been involved in politics like this, and I'm following her lead, and she's supposed to be keeping me out of trouble. Thompson said he signed another conflict of interest disclosure from at Brooks' request on December 11, 2020. Now that he's come to learn about the recent affidavits of Aguilar, Grimaldo, and Enriquez, and Carroll's actions, he's starting to question things. Had he known Brooks asked the pair to do something illegal, Thompson said he might have voted to fire Brooks on December the 13th. He's also wondering if there are things about Marrero he doesn't know. Marrero was also terminated December the 13th without explanation by a 5-2 vote. And, just as with Brooks, he and Councilmember Gilbert Vasquez voted against the terminations. I don't know if I would change my vote unless they come up with something. But yeah, I'm just in total shock about this whole deal because I knew nothing about it until Wednesday of this week. I knew nothing about it whatsoever, Thompson said. He got a copy of the computer log showing Carroll deleted his 2020 disclosure form on Friday, Thompson said. City emails show the computer log was shared with Greg Barber, the first assistant Ector County District Attorney, on Friday. District Attorney Dusty Gallivan said he could neither confirm nor deny his office has been asked to investigate the backdating of the disclosure forms. Thompson was elected with just under 55% of the votes in District 2 in November 2020. insurance issues. On December 8, 2020, city staff placed on the consent agenda a contract with the Standard Insurance Company for group life insurance, AD&D coverage, and retiree life insurance. Standard Insurance had been recommended to the city by STA Benefits, an insurance brokerage firm that has a contract to find insurance companies for the city of Odessa. Minutes for the meeting show Thompson abstained from the vote, saying he used to own STA Benefits and his son was the current owner. Then Mayor David Turner and then council members Michael Shelton, Detra White, Tom Sprawls, Marie Willis, and Peggy Dean approved the contract. In December 14, 2021, Standard's contract, which was again on the consent agenda, was renewed by White, Sprawls, Willis, Mayor Javier Hoven, and Denise Swenner. The minutes show Thompson again abstained. In January 2022, Odessa Development Corporation board member Jeff Russell was removed from the board by a 4-3 vote by the city council because there had been allegations made by Thompson that Russell had discussed an item despite having a conflict of interest. Swenner, Mata, and fellow ODC member Chris Crow argued strenuously against Russell's ouster, alleging STA Benefits benefited from the contract signed December 8, 2020, and Thompson did vote for the contract. The alleged mayor turned amended the minutes of the meeting afterwards. 4 weeks after Russell's dismissal, Crow stood before the city council and demanded Thompson's resignation. He noted that the Texas Secretary of State listed Thompson as the president of the company. However, Thompson has repeatedly said STA Benefits does not provide insurance coverage and did not receive compensation as a result of the vote in December 2020 and later vote in December 2021. Rather, he said, it has a contract with the city to shop around for insurance coverage on behalf of the city. He also adamantly denies allegations that STA Benefits received six figures as a result of the December 2020 and December 2021 votes. STA Benefits receives $30,000 annually as a result of its contract with the city, he said. On January 10th, Crow, without mentioning Thompson's name, told this council STA Benefits has been the city's insurance broker for 29 years and the job hasn't been put up for bid in all those years. Crow, as recently as Saturday, was continuing to cast aspersions on Thomas. I continue to believe that there is a major conflict of interest and a major ethical violation for any sitting council member's family to receive a city contract worth thousands and thousands of dollars. Also, as recently reported, there seems to be an abundance of proof that Mr. Thompson, former city manager Michael Marrero, and former city attorney Natasha Brooks worked to falsify state-required conflict of interest forms to try to protect Mr. Thompson. I suppose Mr. Thompson thinks this doesn't rise to the hint of impropriety standard he espouses for others. In an interview after the January 10th meeting, Thompson said the late Daryl Wells, who was the city's risk management director, lied that STA Benefits did not charge commission for its services. Instead, STA Benefits charges the city a fee based on the number of covered employees. That fee is per person per month and works out to about $30,000 a year, Thompson said. Contracts under $50,000 do not require a council vote, Thompson said. Thompson also said that because STA Benefits charges a fee, when insurance premiums go up, STA Benefits does not get additional money, unlike brokers that get a commission, Thompson said. In addition, STA Benefits is part of a company called National Financial Partners, which probably has 1,000 partners across the nation, Thompson said. That gives his son access to the biggest, best companies out there and great purchasing power, he said. It also helps him find insurance companies willing to provide coverage to first responders and retirees, which can be difficult and expensive, Thompson said. The Odessa American filed a Texas Public Information Act request with the city of Odessa on January 17th, asking for a copy of SDA Benefit's latest contract, a list of all bids submitted by insurance companies through SDA Benefits since 2012, and a list of all insurance companies awarded bids since 2012. It is still pending. Although Thompson now has serious questions about Brooks, he wonders about the timing of Aguilar, Grimaldo, and Enriquez affidavits. He suspects Mayor Javier Hoven, Swanner, Mata, and Crow are still working to discredit him because they believe he's part of a good old boy network. He also suspects they are trying to find a reason to not pay Brooks her severance pay, which equals her annual salary of $185,400. Tim Edgman, who was recently replaced on the ODC board, said last week he also believes the continuing allegations about STA benefits shows the group harbors ill will towards Thompson. Edgman, a managing director for Higginbotham Insurance, confirmed Thompson's statement that STA benefits is likely saving the city money by not seeking a commission. He once sought to become the city's insurance broker, but backed out. I think the chances of us finding someone to do a better job for less was not there, and that's why we backed down, Edgman said. Agents can go in there and see we're not going to beat the price. Back when Russell was dismissed from the ODC, he blamed Edgman. Russell said he didn't file conflict of interest papers in a timely manner because he thought Edgman, who was ODC chair at the time, would have told him to had it been necessary. Edgman said he provided Russell all the information he needed when he first joined the board. DeRee named the Chamber of Commerce's Citizen of the Year by Michael Bauer. David DeRee has helped work with nonprofits to bring in new businesses to Odessa and help the community grow for a number of years. His work has helped make Odessa a better place, and it hasn't gone unnoticed. Next month, he'll be honored for his efforts as he has been named the 2022 Odessa Citizen of the Year by the Chamber of Commerce. However, upon learning about his award, DeRee originally thought it was a mistake. I thought, are you guys having a bad day? I can give you some names of people that belong in there, DeRee said while laughing. But they're a good bunch. The chamber does so much good for the community. It keeps us coming together. It keeps us pointed in the right direction. I can't talk highly enough about the chamber. They're a great group. DeRee will be honored with a ceremony that will take place at 11:30 a.m., February the 2nd, at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. It's very humbling, DeRee said. It's very surprising. There are probably 1,000 names that should be in there before me. That's not why we volunteer to the community. It's not for the accolades or the honor. It's to try and make this place a better place. There are a lot of people doing a lot of good, and I'm just surprised that somebody would call me out like this. I'm very humbled. I'm very honored. DeRee recently retired as a CPA from the Weaver Accounting Firm in Midland. He is a longtime Odessan. He's been involved a lot behind the scenes in many ways. Odessa Chamber of Commerce President Renee Earls said he has worked in the audit side of Weaver, performing audits on many companies, most of them nonprofits. He has lent his financial expertise to so many different nonprofits throughout the decades of his work. He has worked on school bonds and economic development. He served as the immediate past president of the Odessa Country Club. He's been around for quite some time and has a long history of service. Since 1958, the Odessa Chamber of Commerce has honored one or two individuals each year, with the exception of 2020, who have helped make the community a better place through their jobs and volunteer work. The award ceremony was not held for 2020 due to the pandemic. However, last year's honor was awarded to the staffs at Odessa Regional Medical Center and Medical Center Health for their work at the front lines of the pandemic. It was the first time that the award was given to more than two people. Normally, we pick one person or maybe a couple, like a husband and a wife combo, Earl said, but we felt like that with all that had happened, it was a little out of the box, but we chose the employees of the two healthcare facilities who have been at the front lines of the pandemic. People step up and do extraordinary things here in Odessa. They don't do it for any particular reason other than to give back. They want their community to prosper and grow. They live here and they work here. They raise their families here and want their community to be as excellent as can be. Doree has worked with Grow Odessa, formerly the Odessa Industrial Development, helping bring businesses to the area and helping the economic development. We're very fortunate and very blessed, Doree said. There's plenty to do if you want to help make this place better for the children and grandchildren. One of the things that made Doree step out was his longtime service to the community and leadership. From his accounting background, he's a numbers guy, Earl said. He looks at the numbers and makes sure that things are the way they're supposed to be for these companies and nonprofits. Because of his position, we did have direct contact with many of the organizations in town. He's very steady. If you ask him to do something, he'll follow through and takes care of it. You never have to have a question or a doubt about his volunteer services. Earl said there were a lot of great people nominated for the Citizen of the Year and that it was a daunting task to select a person for the award. There were a lot of nominations this year and some very high caliber nominations, Earl said. It's a very difficult process for the committee to go through. There are so many people to honor. Even David, when we called him, he was like, there are so many people who should get this. But Odessa is so fortunate to have so many people step up and do the work because they want to have a great community. The list is so long of people that are truly extraordinary to be in our community. David is very proud to be honored this year. He really has a resume of longtime service. For more information about this year's award ceremony, go to tinyurl.com/3CF54EAC.
Education Partnership. With new people at the helm of the Early Childhood Action and Grow Our Own Networks, the groups are set to move ahead. Shelby Smith is the coordinator of ECAN and Kendall Gray, the coordinator of Grow Our Own. Gray is also working on redesigning the partnership's website and working on social media. The Early Childhood Action Network meetings will start this month on a bi-monthly basis. Both organizations are under the umbrella of the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin. The Education Partnership recently completed a strategic plan. We're looking to improve the quality of child care seats, the quantity of seats that we have in our area, as well as kindergarten readiness, ensuring that students in our area are entering kindergarten ready and prepared. If you think about it, the ECAN network is like the big table when you think of that birth to five space. The ECAN is pediatricians, child care centers, other community members like nonprofits, other resources that our community has access to, and then the school districts as well, Smith said. Within the ECAN, we've also started Child Care Coalition meetings. The Midland County Child Care Coalition has been up and running for, I would say, the last year. They meet monthly, and so that's with the school districts, other community partners, and then child care centers. It's an opportunity for those centers to come and receive different things once a month. We've had people with the school district present ideas that they can take back to their classroom, just different things like that, Smith added. The Ector County Early Childhood Coalition has met a couple of times, but it will start meeting monthly this month as well as on the first Thursday of every month. Smith said the makeup of the committee will depend on what's needed. It just depends on what feedback we get and what they would like to get from these meetings. We don't ever want to just make it feel like another meeting. If there's a resource that they feel that they're lacking, we want them to be able to get that for them. For Grow Our Own, Gray said there is a lot to go after. I think our overall goal is just that when students graduate, they are ready to enter college or whatever post-secondary education path they choose, or they're ready to enter the workforce. We're working a lot on building out those pathways because we recognize that there's kids that a four-year college degree is not what they want. So we're focusing a lot on getting a credential or certification in high school. So when they do graduate, they can have these higher paying jobs. Really, overall, we need to create a workforce, and that's why we're growing our own, because we need a workforce here, Gray said. It's typically easier to get people to stay close to home if they have grown up here. Gray said they have started a college, career, military readiness, professional learning community. We've invited all of the districts that we serve, so Region 18 Education Service Center, plus any of the districts that the Permian Strategic Partnership serves. We've hosted two meetings so far, and we invited the superintendents. We've had a lot of them come together, and then they tell whoever else on their teams to join. We just get to talk about the data and how to use it because we're trying to get everyone on the same path because we all have the same problems, Gray said. Both Smith and Gray have been with the partnership for a short time, but they have roots in this area. Smith said she has worked for both Ector County and Midland ISDs. Much of her background is in special education. Gray worked for Midland Development Corporation before joining the Education Partnership. Since she doesn't have a background in education, Gray said she has been learning a lot and hopes to help people decide to stay here. I never thought I would stay here after I left for college. I graduated during COVID, so that really put a damper in all my plans. I ended up getting a job here, and now I'll probably never leave because I love it so much, Gray said. Both want to give back to the community that has given so much to them, but also coming from it from a perspective of, I have an opportunity to make an impact on children's lives. I probably wouldn't have had that opportunity. When I was at the school district, yes, I was able to make a difference, but I feel like this could really make some big changes for students entering the school districts and child care, Smith said. Smith started out as a speech assistant, taught third grade, special education, and from there became a diagnostician. Her last role with MISD was as child find coordinator, where she identified children 3 to 5 years old who met eligibility requirements for special education. Early childhood has always been my heart. That's where I started as a speech assistant, and that's just always been where my heart is, Smith said. Gray added that they both now get to serve not only their hometown of Odessa, but the broader community as well into eastern New Mexico. Smith and Gray are Permian high school graduates. Smith earned a bachelor's degree in communication science disorders from Abilene Christian University and a master's in special education from Sewell Ross State University. Gray earned a bachelor's degree in marketing from Texas Tech University. We don't have a direct impact on the students, but we have access to those who do, Gray said. So if we can help them figure out the best way to use their resources to make an impact, it's going to improve quality of life. Education as a quality of life thing, and it's just going to make everything better. There is a culture in the basin that you don't need to finish high school when you can work in the oil field and make a lot of money. But Smith and Gray are trying to change that. We're working on a project right now with Wonder Strategies for Good. It's called the Pathways Narrative Project. We're trying to shift the narrative of I don't need any post-secondary education to make a good living in the Permian Basin. But we think that you need some sort of post-secondary education, whether that's a six-month certificate through OC or community college, or that's just an associate degree, but you need something to be able to have those employable skills. We're working on that right now, and it's very interesting. We have a grant for that. When I started, that was one of the things that I really enjoyed. That's what I really love doing right now, is shifting that narrative. Again, we're trying to get people to come back and work here. It all leads to the same thing, Gray added. Smith said she thinks a lot of that mindset is where we live and that the workforce is linked to energy. But we also need people in those jobs that aren't energy. We need nurses and teachers. There's a need for all of that here. She added that things aren't going to change overnight. We're both here now, and we're both in our roles. Finally, someone doing both of our jobs. So now we get to help make that change, Gray said. Especially in education, she said, something is always changing. Creating the buy-in from our stakeholders to want to have a part in that big change is big, Smith said.
Hi, this is Christy, and I'm continuing to read the Odessa American for Wednesday, January 25th, 2023. Is collagen good for the aging body? Dear Dr. Roach, I have read various articles about the health benefits of collagen. Is this product beneficial to the aging body or just another current health fad? BC. Answer. Collagen is a connective protein found in most meat. It can also be taken as a supplement at generally a higher cost than you would pay from consuming it as a food. I have read that the sources of some of the supplemental collagen sold is from parts of the animal likely contaminated by heavy metals, such as lead and cadmium. The amino acids in the collagen protein are certainly necessary for good functioning of the body, but it's not at all clear to me that collagen is especially helpful for symptoms, and it's not clear that collagen needs to be taken as a supplement. Dr. Roach regrets that he is unable to answer individual letters, but will incorporate them in the column whenever possible. Readers may email questions to yourgoodhealth@med.cornell.edu. To Your Good Health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida 32853-6475.
This is the Dear Abby column. Woman wants a relationship with happily married couple. Dear Abby, I'm a woman in my early 50s who has been through two divorces. This may make me sound like a bad person, but I'm really nice and quite conservative. I just make poor choices when it comes to men. A few years ago, I met a woman I have become good friends with. She's happily married. She and her husband are empty nesters like I am. We often socialize, and when we do, there is definite chemistry between the three of us. I've recently heard of the concept of a throuple, which is consenting adults living together as any couple would, except there are three rather than two. I can't help but wonder whether my friend, her husband, and I might make a good throuple. This is not a case of rushing into something. We have known each other for several years and have established trust and compatibility. I'm nervous to bring this up because I don't want to jeopardize our friendship. I'm also scared about how deeply I feel for both of these people, and I think it's mutual. I don't like being single, and the thought of dating again gives me hives. What should I do? Signed, Found the Right Ones Out West. Dear Found, carefully consider which will give you worse hives. After two divorces, you are now in a position to make wiser decisions about men in the future, providing you're willing to risk dipping your toe in the dating pool. It's very possible that as much as this couple likes you, they may not be enthusiastic about the idea of a throuple. Proposing what you have in mind may put a crimp in your relationship with one or both of them. Unless you can find a way to casually gauge their reaction to throupling, hypothetically in the course of a conversation, allow me to share a bit of wisdom that has served me well. When in doubt, don't. Dear Abby, our daughter's husband has not bonded with their youngest child. He won't hold her or play with her and barely acknowledges her existence. When, through therapy, our daughter learned to confront the issue, he admitted he just doesn't feel anything for the child. In truth, he's not much more attentive to their 3-year-old. He would rather play video games than interact with his children or his wife. As far as we know, he isn't physically abusive toward the children or our daughter, but he is definitely verbally abusive. Having been a victim of abuse myself, I am well aware that verbal abuse is just as damaging as physical abuse, and in fact is sometimes a precursor to physical abuse. As grandparents, is there anything we can do, or must we watch these precious little girls be starved for affection from their father? Signed, Aware in Texas. Dear Aware, while you cannot force your son-in-law to be a better parent or husband, you can encourage your daughter to continue her therapy so she can become more assertive, not only for the sake of her children, but also for herself. It may give her the strength to end the marriage. In the meantime, continue to love your grandchildren and give them the positive reinforcement and all the attention they deserve so they learn what healthy relationships feel like. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.